welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, June 29, 2021. Some residents of Torit Town in eastern Equatorial State say insecurity is too common in the area.
People are living with fear, a lot of fear. In the evening especially, you can enter inside as early as possible, and then people don't come out.
And the deputy governor of Eastern Equatorial State says the state governor does not consult other members of his cabinet.
We were all promoting that we need to work together for the sake of our people and everybody, and everything was well. But until Friday night, when I was surprised by a decree from the governor.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some residents of Eastern Equatorial State's Torit County say they live in fear due to insecurity in the area. The governor of Eastern Equatorial State insists that security forces are handling the situation. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
Joyce Amito, a women's rights activist working as a secretary for Eastern Equatorial Women's Association, a group that advocates for women's and girls' rights, says insecurity is on the rise, especially after a generation of young men known locally as Monyumiji attacked eight workers more than a month ago.
People are living with fear, a lot of fear. In the evening especially, you can enter inside as early as possible, and then people don't come out for urine. So you can urinate inside, and then in the morning you pour.
Lily Hitira Nantisho, a Torit-based businesswoman, says about 2 weeks ago, armed young men attacked her home. She says the armed men found her children and demanded money.
They put them inside and start telling them, give us money, then starting collecting the bags, the mobiles, just everything for those boys, and we are in the big room. Then a small girl also ran, hey, mommy, there's the same people are coming now. They are attacking those of Thomas. Then I have to come at the door, and then my firstborn say, oh, mommy, you see there's a guy standing there pointing guns to those people. And those people also continue robbing, but we could not do anything. And then I called the security.
Hidira says she called security when the gunmen continued robbing her. Eastern Equatorial State Governor Luis Lobong says the security situation in the state is calm, except for what he calls isolated cases of cattle rustling, robbery on the highway, and some petty stealing in Torit Town.
And of course, I can just agree that there may be sometimes robbery in the houses. Like any other town, major towns are always, you will find these criminals happening. Robbery is always everywhere.
Lobong says the state government has put in place measures to counter insecurity.
We are people patrolling, and like for us in the town of Torit, it is actually the responsibility of the mayor, or town mayor. Provide security. We have forces that is under him patrolling the town. He has also organized the youth in each block to coordinate with the patrolling security team.
Lobong says security forces have arrested some suspected criminals and will continue to work with state authorities to improve security. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
Still in Eastern Equatorial State, the deputy governor of the state has criticized Governor Luis Lobong for appointing state officials without consulting other parties who signed the revitalized peace agreement. Governor Lobong says his decision to appoint a secretary general and his deputy does not violate the peace agreement. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Eastern Equatorial State Governor Luis Lobong, a member of the SPLM party, issued a decree appointing several state officials last Friday. His deputy, Mary Alphonse Nadio Lodira, who is from the SPLM IO party, says this is not the first time Lobong has appointed people to the state government without consultation.
We were all promoting that we need to work together for the sake of our people and everybody, and everything was well. But until Friday night, when I was surprised by a decree from the governor appointing somebody as the SG of the state and the deputy SG, and then also some other person, two persons, that took me by surprise because I was with him during daytime and this thing, and he did not even whisper to me that he was going to do this.
Lodira says she remains optimistic that the governor's decisions will not jeopardize her working relationship with Lobong, but his relations with the SPLM-IO party is a different story.
Yeah, the people should actually really talk on that. What I'm raising is something that is written in the revitalized peace agreement, that the power sharing from all the levels of the government up to the lower level. But now these appointments are all from one party. I don't mind if the appointment was to be from all one party. The consultation was very important.
Lodira says she believes if the parties were consulted, they would be able to agree and appoint the most qualified people to state government posts who will work in the interests of the people of Eastern Equatoria. Governor Lobong insists that his appointment of a Secretary General, his deputy and other officials do not violate the agreement since they are civil servants who serve the public and have nothing to do with party affiliation.
The peace agreement is silent. Like the position of the civil servant. The civil servant does not belong to any party. They are only implementing the policies and delivering the services to the people on behalf of the government. And what happened is like the position of the Secretary General and the Deputy Secretary General. These two people being appointed, I'm actually confirming, not even, because both of them, they have been sharp person or the secretaries of the defunct Kapoeta and Tori.
Lobong says he was also surprised to see reports circulating on social media that Lodira was criticizing his decisions even when she did not complain to him directly before going to the media. Lobong says the people of Eastern Equatoria should remain calm as he plans to speak with the SPLM-IO members to resolve the disagreement and move forward.
I therefore call all the SPLM-IO to come to the forum so that we can dialogue on the matter. If they accept to come to the forum and raise their concern, I'm ready. And we discuss. They either convince me or I convince them based on the law and based on the agreement. I had promised, including my leadership, the party that has brought me here, that I will try my best not to create problems in implementation of this peace agreement. That what is happening in the other state, I believe it will not happen in my state.
Both Governor Lobong and Lodira say they are optimistic the matter will be resolved amicably. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Sudan, where Sudanese authorities have launched a new mobile application for its government-owned Sudan News Agency on Google Store for Android users. Sudan's information minister says the application is meant to enable international community and Sudanese in the diaspora to access information on government activities. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Speaking at the launch of the program Monday in Khartoum, Sudan Information Minister Hamza Balul said the mobile app would stream access to information on various government activities to a wider community across the globe. Balul says, as media outlets around the world are now using modern technology to present information, the Sudan News Agency will do the same.
Suna after the revolution has been technically booming primarily as a digital platform, and it has been able to provide government information to a wider population inside and outside Sudan, and this is what we need to develop.
The Sudan News Agency focuses on Sudan's government activities and presents news in English, Arabic and French. It was launched in 1971 during the rule of President Jafar Muhammad Nimeri. Minister Balul encouraged the administration of Suna to focus on content and stories that are responsive to the expectations of the Sudanese revolutionaries.
We need to act according to the expectations, hopes and ambitions of the Sudanese after the revolution. They expect a lot from this government and we need to carry out our role that exceeds their expectations. We in the Ministry of Information are ready to simplify access to information to a wider population all the time.
Sudanese officials say the launch of the Suna app on Google Store will help the transitional government present its achievements, challenges and the way forward until national elections are held. He says users of the Suna app should also spark comments and feedback on the government's activities.
Our objective is to lead this transition period to a free and fair election. This is the ambition of the Sudanese who turned out in millions to sacrifice for the change in their country. We need to present this image of Sudan, the country that's unique in its people who sacrificed themselves as martyrs, wounded and missing individuals to liberate this country.
Sudanese journalists have welcomed the launch of the Suna app and called it a good development in the effort to access information across the country. Mustafa Hussein, a Sudanese freelance journalist based in Khartoum, says the app's launch will help him monitor the performance of the transitional government and help him collect needed information for his reporting.
It's really a great chance for me as Sudanese journalist to have such kind of app which helped me to reach the news and information in easy way. I have been using the Suna website sometimes to collect information, sometimes to Facebook or Twitter or YouTube. So now the app is very simple.
The Suna app is free and available on Google Store. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, South Africa is going through a rough third wave of COVID-19. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what steps should the government take to ensure children are enrolled and stay in school?
I think governments should get more facilities in the schools, like library, and also to get them a playing ground. Because as the child learns, they have to play to release stress.
There has to be a conducive learning atmosphere, which of course we lack in most of our government schools.
Government should provide free education for the people in the village, as well as in town also.
Government should provide free meals for kids when they go to school. They should also provide good learning environment. They should also provide qualified teachers who would also take care of the children and keep them engaged so they'll be interested in schooling.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America, and in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a look at South Africa's struggle to contain the spread of COVID-19. In South Africa, infections and deaths are mounting due to the highly transmissible Delta variant of COVID-19. This is sparking calls for the government to use whichever vaccine it can procure. Some citizens and opposition parties say the African nation hit hardest by the pandemic can no longer afford to choose which vaccine it uses. But medical scientists call that a dangerous stance. For VOA News, Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
The leader of the chief opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, John Steenhuisen, says the government's using the crisis presented by the Delta variant to cover its failures.
The truth of the matter is we're sitting without vaccines, and we're sitting with a situation where less than 1% of the population is vaccinated, leaving many, many people at risk. I visited a number of sites where they've had to close the sites down, not because there's no demand, not because there's no personnel, but because there are no vaccines.
His view is that any jab that's even mildly effective against any strain of COVID-19 must go into South African arms now. Professor Helen Rees is the scientist credited with building South Africa's Health Products Regulatory Authority, or SAHPRA, into one of Africa's few internationally renowned medicine control bodies. Rees told an online briefing of reporters there are very good reasons why a vaccine rollout should rely on scientific evidence of efficacy and why SAHPRA cannot simply give in to public and political pressure.
We've now got a new variant. And every time you see a new variant, we immediately have to say, will the vaccines that we have work at all, work as well, work for mild and moderate disease, work to stop transmission of the virus, and very important, most important at the moment, work to prevent severe disease and hospitalization and death.
Scientists say it's no good having a vaccine that technically prevents death, but not serious illness. In that case, they say, people in South Africa will still die because there aren't enough hospital beds, ventilators, and doctors to care for them. It's encouraging, though, says Rees, that preliminary evidence suggests most of the vaccines currently available, including one being rolled out in South Africa, Pfizer, are very effective against preventing severe disease in people infected with the Delta mutation. The country is also using the Johnson & Johnson shot and could also use AstraZeneca in the future, and three more, says Rees.
The Sinovac is the most advanced, and it's an advanced stage of review. The Sputnik as well is well underway in terms of the review, and a very new application has come in now for a third vaccine called Sinopharm. And that's the other thing to remember, is that as the Delta is becoming so prevalent across the world, that we are going to be able to draw on other countries' experiences of using vaccines that we're also using, and we'll be able to look and see what they are establishing in terms of the effectiveness of that vaccine.
She agrees that the priority for South Africa now, with 2 million infections and more than 60,000 fatalities, is to get people vaccinated with safe jabs as fast as possible.
The longer we have large numbers of people who are not immunized, the more likely we're going to see the emergence of new variants. In addition, you can see how many variants are emerging all the time and changing, and the impact of when you have a variant like the Delta variant in terms of rapid spread and increased transmissibility.
South Africa's intense third wave of the pandemic has resulted in the government reimposing a hard lockdown. But scientists say this, coupled with an extremely low vaccination rate, won't stop a fourth wave from striking in a few months' time. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Still on COVID issues, while the world has been dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic for more than a year, the Delta variant is increasingly becoming a concern. To learn more about what is known about the spreading version of the coronavirus, and more importantly, where knowledge gaps exist, International Edition's host Steve Miller spoke with Associate Professor of Virology at the University of Connecticut.
Sure, let me go back a little bit. As you may recall, the Delta variant was first identified in India, and that was at the end of March. It was initially characterized as a double mutant variant, not because it only had two mutations, because in reality it has more than that, but because it has two key mutations in the spike protein of the virus. The spike protein is the one responsible for the virus attachment to cells. So that's why those are key mutations. So these key mutations, they make the virus even more transmissible, than the alpha or the UK variant that became the dominant strain in the US here earlier this year. And it is perhaps as much as 40 to 60% more transmissible than the alpha variant. And remember that the alpha variant was already more transmissible than the original SARS coronavirus 2. So Delta is indeed significantly more transmissible. And that's one key difference. It is possibly also associated with more severe disease and increased risk of hospitalization. However, that's not absolutely, very clear right now. And of course, now we have, the so-called Delta Plus variant, which is derived from the Delta variant itself. It has an additional mutation that affects that spike protein. But in reality, we don't know much about this new subvariant yet. We can't really say that it's going to be worse than the Delta variant that it derives from.
So that's what we know. You alluded a little bit to what we don't know about the Delta variant. But as a virologist and a vaccinologist, what do you think is the most pressing concern in terms of learning more about the Delta variant?
And in terms of the virus itself, we should expect sort of a limit on how much the virus can improve its ability to enhance its transmissibility. And that's because, the virus still needs to be fit. There's so much that the virus can change without compromising other functions that the virus has to do to be able to, replicate successfully. So my hope is that we are approaching the limit at this point, at least as far as transmissibility goes. I think we are reaching the limit, so to speak, of how well the virus can improve its transmissibility without affecting, other components of the virus life cycle. And that seems to be perhaps, the good news, but we don't know yet. That is one of the unknowns as well. We don't know yet. It is possible that, different combinations of mutations may improve transmissibility even more. The reality is we don't know. We expect to be reaching that limit right now.
Time and time again, healthcare professionals have said that vaccinations and vaccination programs is the key to putting the pandemic behind us. What do we know about the efficacy of the coronavirus vaccines on this Delta variant?
Okay, so obviously everybody wants to know if vaccines are working against the Delta variant and potentially new variants, right? And the good news is that vaccines still provide adequate protection against the Delta variant. Obviously, we are hearing about breakthrough cases where vaccinated people actually end up getting COVID, but majority of those people are protected from severe disease. The greatest majority is protected, from death, so they're not going to die from COVID. So that is really the great news.
That is great news if you are able to obtain a vaccine. However, as the WHO said, there is vaccine inequality in the world.
So the reality is that we are really living in different worlds, right? So we have, a situation in certain countries like the U.S. where we are able to offer vaccines to pretty much everyone that wants to have one, although not everybody wants to have one. And, on the other end of the spectrum, we have places where people, are desperate and really want to get a vaccine, but don't even have a chance, don't have access to those vaccines yet. I think we are close to vaccinating or to distributing about 3 billion doses of the vaccine worldwide, which is really very, very significant. But that distribution is not equal. And that is a problem, right? So that's something that needs to be fixed. And the reality is that for a more transmissible variant, in the absence of herd or community immunity, which is achieved by vaccines, those measures that we learned so much to hate are still our best tools to avoid new outbreaks. I'm talking about things like social distancing, masks, avoiding crowds, that type of thing. And for a variant like the Delta variant that's much more transmissible, it's a certain level of social distancing and masking was able to contain. For example, the Alpha variant, we're going to have to go a step up to be able to contain the Delta variant. So, it's kind of sad news for everybody because realistically, we are still going to have to be considering social distancing, masking, avoiding crowds and all of that stuff, regardless of having access to vaccines or not, until we reach that level of herd immunity or community immunity, that really will break those cycles of transmission. That won't really allow, you know, those cycles of transmission to cause an outbreak. And we sadly are not there yet. We may be very close to that in certain places. For example, certain states here in the northeastern of the U.S. where we have a very high rate of vaccination. But we are definitely not close to that in some of the other states. And if you look worldwide, that's you know, we are very, very far from that goal.
That's Paolo Verardi, Associate Professor of Virology and Vaccinology at the University of Connecticut. He spoke with International Edition host Steve Miller.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you today. We now leave you with Khalid and the song Aisha.
Comme si je n'existais pas, elle est passée à côté de moi, sans un regard, reine de Saba. J'ai dit Aïcha, prends tout est pour toi. Voici les perles, les bijoux, aussi au retour de ton cou, les fruits bien mûrs au goût de miel. Ma vie, Aïcha, si tu m'aimes.
Listening to Khalid and the song Aisha. I am John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Aisha, Aisha, écoute-moi. Aisha, Aisha, écoute-moi.